Radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Wisconsin Department of Veteran Affairs offers grant funds to employers who hire veterans who have a service-connected disability of 50% or more. In Racine, help is available to navigate the grant process by calling Travis at 262-638-6637.
Support comes from the Racine Theater Guild, presenting the Iliad, the Odyssey, and all of Greek mythology in 99 minutes or less, this weekend and next. Tickets are available at racinetheater.org or by calling the box office at 262-633-4218. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, welcome to the 2017 WGTD Education Matters Kenosha Unified School District School Board Candidates Forum. I'm your host, Karen Sconsert. Welcome to our four candidates, Zach Jacobs, Gary Kunick, Mary Motter, and Dan Wade. Thank you all for being here. I will explain the format and timing for the forum in a moment, but first, as a matter of full disclosure, I want to say I'm a resident and taxpayer of Kenosha and a parent of a seventh grader at Bullen Middle School. I'm also an associate professor of education at Carthage College and therefore have a lot of experience with various KUSD schools through research projects, fieldwork, student teaching placements, interviewing KUSD personnel for this radio program, and through alumni of Carthage who now teach in KUSD schools. But I don't think I've met any of you before today, is that correct? All right, so good. That we're all on equal footing here. I don't know them at all. So the format is going to work this way. Each candidate is going to have 1 minute to introduce her or himself and tell why they are running and their qualifications for the position of school board member. After that, I will ask a series of questions. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer. I'll give a 15-second nonverbal warning as your time is running out. Please adhere to the time limit as well as you can. If there's extra time in your 2 minutes, I might ask a follow-up question or ask for clarification. The order of the candidates will rotate with each question, so each candidate will have a chance to answer first, second, third, and fourth. If we have time for more than four questions, I'll start the cycle all over again. At the end of our time, each candidate will have a chance to give a closing or a summary statement. So we'll start with the introductions and opening statements. You'll have 1 minute each. So we'll start with Zach Jacobs.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Zach Jacobs. I'm a 23-year-old student at Carthage College, finishing up a bachelor's degree in religious studies, classics, and chemistry. I'm hoping to go to medical school after I finish up the rest of my undergraduate. And I'm running for the school board because KUSD offered me a lot of opportunities. I struggled as a student before coming to this district to the point where no one even thought I'd graduate high school, let alone get through undergrad with very good grades and go off to graduate school. And what I want to do is I want to ensure that the same opportunities I received at the high school I went to, Lakeview Technical College, are extended to all students in KUSD. It was an idea that if I want to make change, the only person who can bring that change is myself. Thank you.
Okay. And Gary Kunick.
Thanks so much, Karen. You know, if you've been paying attention in the school district 3 years ago, things were just in disarray and chaos, and that's what prompted me to run 3 years ago. I believed we could change that, and I believe we have. We brought civility back to the school board. We're getting a lot of things accomplished because we're getting along and acting professionally. And that's important for our students, teachers, and taxpayers. Our graduation rates are up 90% 2 years in a row. Now, we're still at a point where African-American graduation rates are at 76%, and that's an increase, but we need to work on that. We've kept the taxes in check, and we've hired one of the best superintendents in the nation. And I'm running again because I want to keep that going. I spent 20 years in the Air Force and 4.5 years as the education reporter at the Kenosha News, and I think that qualifies me to continue serving, and I hope the community will give me that opportunity.
Okay, thank you. And now, Mary Motter.
Hi, Karen. I'm running because I have spent a long time in education, in the field of education. I think by now, after 5 forums, everybody knows that I've spent about 28 years teaching. I also was a substitute teacher with Kenosha Unified for the first 3 years, and I visited every building. What I don't know if it's been brought out is I have a Master's of Science in Education. I have a bachelor's degree. I'm certified K through 9 and 7 through 12 in different areas. I've also taught at a number of colleges as an adjunct professor, taught classes in working with difficult students. I even taught a class at Carthage on special education law. I've presented at a number of state and local conferences. After being involved with KUSD for so many years, I want to continue being involved in things that affect our children and our community.
Thank you. And Dan Wade.
Thank you, Karen. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dan Wade. Some of you may know me as retired, being the key word, chief of police for the city of Kenosha. 3 years ago, I ran for the school board because I thought that my experience would definitely help the school board, who at that time was in disarray. Over the past 3 years, I think we have come together as a board. I thought we've done an excellent job, but there are so many more things that need to be done. And that's the reason I'm running again. I feel that to back out of anything right now, to quit, would be basically harmful to the district itself. I believe we have solved most of the problems with the curriculum audit. We've hired an excellent superintendent of schools, and there are many, many things to be done yet, and I would like to be around to help finish that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you all very much. So we're going to start with questions, and again, I'm rotating the order of the answers, so everyone gets a chance to answer first, middle, and last. So the first question, and Mr. Jacobs will be the first to answer it, is how would you determine your budget priorities with a limited amount of funds to distribute? How do you decide between curriculum, infrastructure updates, salary increases, and so forth?
Well, balancing the budget is a very important aspect of any government agency, which the district is essentially a local government agency. First and foremost, you know, the curriculum is the most important, I would say, aspect of a school district, because without having the materials necessary and the curriculum necessary to teach students, our educators can't properly do their jobs. The second most important thing, I would say, is got to be finding a way to make our salary schedule work. Because if our district isn't competitive, we're going to start bleeding our best teachers. We're going to start losing them from our district, and we're not going to keep attracting them. Now, I have a number of friends who go to Carthage and Parkside, and they're neck deep in student loan debt. Some of them have kids, and they're coming in. And the problem they're seeing is our salary schedule is frozen. So they start out at a basic starting salary, which they're okay with, but the problem is it stays that way indefinitely until we solve this problem. So, you know, they're looking to go outside of the district, where for a long time most students from Carthage and Parkside who were in education and did their student teaching here stay in district, and that might change, and that would be very harmful to the district because these are two very excellent colleges putting out excellent students or graduates. So I would say those two are the main priorities, at least as far as what needs to be taken care of right now. You know, you can't let infrastructure fall by the wayside, but it's a significant issue when I would say that the core things that allow a district to function are proper curriculum in the classrooms and educators having the resources and tools and the salary they need to be able to do their job and be valued in their job.
Okay, thank you. And now, Mr. Kunick.
Thanks. Karen, I think the best way to tell you what we would or will do is to tell you what we've done. We've philosophically committed to a $4.4 million salary increase for our employees, and we're looking at ways of finding that in the budget right now. And we are working on that salary structure that Zach has talked about because it's very important. We've brought Bradford Stadium to fruition. We've had several maintenance and energy projects brought online as we've retired other debt. And that's the key, is to be able to do all those things, the curriculum, the salary, the maintenance projects, and everything else while keeping our taxes in check, because we represent everybody in the district. We represent students, teachers, and taxpayers. And if you look, we've kept taxes in check the last 3 years, and that is what is key. Now, I'm not going to sit here and take 100% credit for that, because the reality is we hired an outstanding superintendent, and the superintendent has hired an outstanding staff with people like Tara Camden in the finance department there. And we govern. We don't micromanage and nitpick. It's important to ask tough questions and ask hard questions to make sure people are responsible. But when you micromanage and you demand things that aren't necessary or needed that get in the way, that gets in the way of the effective leadership and management of those finances. We've done that. We've updated our curriculum. We just approved updated curriculum. We listen to our teachers. We listen to our parents. We bring in committees on what we can do. And we don't spend money that we don't have. That's why I'm fundamentally opposed to a tax referendum to pay for teacher salaries, because I believe if teachers approve it and then, or if taxpayers approve it and then turn it down, it's going to lead to massive teacher layoffs and massive cuts in programs, and we just cannot afford to do that.
Okay, thank you. And Mrs. Motter.
Well, all three are very important, but when you're talking about curriculum, I don't think that it needs to be a huge expense. In fact, over my years of teaching, I recall being on a number of curriculum committees and helping to write curriculum. Teachers actually love to write their own curriculum, and we don't have to spend a lot of money on it. We also have some amazing resources in the community with Parkside and Carthage. There was, back in 2009, 2010, there was a marvelous program that the district had where they used Carthage students to tutor Head Start and early childhood students. And Greg Woodward would take some money off of the tuition. It was sort of a win-win. And I'm not sure where that program went, but it was a really good deal for the district and great for the Carthage students. As far as infrastructure, we have to maintain our schools. We can't have things falling apart. We can't have safety hazards. With the salary, I think what the teachers really, really want is they want to know where they're going with the salary structure. So as it is being frozen and not really knowing what's going to happen next year, if they take classes, they're not being paid extra for it. So there's really not a lot of incentive for the teachers to get extra credits, yet they have to retain their license. So it's kind of frustrating for them. And that's what I sense is a lot of frustration. They don't want to make a ton of money, but they want to know where they're going and where their future is with the district. And new teachers that come in, they want to know where their future is. So I think it's important that the salary schedule is settled. As far as the keeping the taxes in check, well, nobody wants to see skyrocketing taxes. However, we have seen with a number of referendums, and I'm not advocating referendums, but around the state we have seen that something like 80% have passed, okay, showing people believe in public education.
Right. And finally, thank you. Finally, Mr. Wade.
Thank you, Karen. You know, budgets are something that we all have to live in, whether it be our personal life or professional life. They're a guideline. The KUSD budget is about $350 million. You know, that sounds like a lot of money, but the general fund makes up about 10% of them, or about makes up $250 million of that budget. Now, if we don't have the money to fund things, we have to think outside the box. Now, whether that means getting businesses involved, getting agencies involved, you know, that's what we got to do. We got to get the parents involved also. And that's usually a very low-cost item. You know, but as far as curriculum, that's what we're here about, making sure that our students have the best possible education that money can buy or can't buy. Now, again, we account for state aid. We don't know what that's going to be for the upcoming years, which makes setting a budget extremely, extremely difficult. If it comes in like they project, you know, we'll have some money left, you know, extra money that we haven't had in years past, that will make things a little bit easier. But the fact is that, you know, we as a board, we govern, and it's our duty to be out there advocating for the district. The teachers, my God, that, you know, they should be paid the best in the world because they are the best. But because of, again, financial issues that we've had over the years, they have been, we've had to give out stipends. We couldn't give percentage raises except for 1 or 2 years. And that is difficult for anybody to live on, not knowing what's going to happen. Am I going to get a raise next year? Or am I not? So, but I think the salary structure team is working on that, and hopefully we will come up with the right answer.
Okay, thank you all very much. We're on to our next question, and this time Mr. Kunick will be first. So some of you may have already heard about this, but there's a federal bill, HB 610, which has been introduced to committees in the House of Representatives. It seeks to dismantle the current Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which was originally passed in 1965. Education Secretary DeVos, President Trump, and Speaker Ryan have all expressed support for the ideas contained within this bill. Among other things, it would take current Title I funding, which is distributed to schools and districts with low-income students, of which KUSD is one. We have 52% low-income students in our district. And they would take that money and redistribute it in the form of vouchers. So what should be the district's response to this bill, Mr. Kunick?
It's a very detailed and good question. This always comes up every time talking about vouchers and charter schools. And my answer is we have some phenomenal schools within our district, phenomenal choice schools when you look at Lakeview, Harborside, Ruther, K-Tech East, K-Tech West, and other areas such as E-School. And I tell people, instead of worrying about the voucher schools coming in here, let's make our schools so good that students don't want to leave. And we're doing that. And that's why we have schools like Lakeview. That's why we brought the Bradford Stadium to fruition. I can understand when people hear this stuff at the national level, the concern that that causes. But I want to reassure people that at the local level where we are at, it is the decisions we are making that really make that difference and make our district what it is. You know, I think we need to take care of our students. I believe we're doing that in our district, and I think we're going to continue to do that in our district. National policy is going to come and go. It's always, you know, there's always going to be a different administration. There's always going to be a different opinion. We've seen that in the 3 years we've been on the board. And, you know, we are still successful, and we're going to continue to be successful.
Okay. So, Mrs. Motter.
Yes. Actually, I've been working very hard outside of my campaign and prior to the start of the campaign to try to inform people about the problems of having an education secretary who doesn't believe in public education. And I have some very strong feelings about that. But as far as the actual bill, I believe that what happens ultimately is it sort of gives a blank check to the states, and so that the individual governors can do what they feel is best. So depending on the state, it might work well for public schools or not. In our case, I guess I have to put in a plug here for our current Secretary of Education, Tony Evers, because he's been working very, very hard to get the money to the public schools. And if Tony Evers is reelected, then, and that's aside from my own campaign, then I think that the dangers of this bill will be somewhat mitigated because he'll be fighting for public education. I don't believe that we need a blank checks to the states. I think that there needs to be some direction from the federal government, but it is what it is. And I think that we have to keep on fighting at the local level and at the state level to get money for schools, because it's important. In Kenosha, in KUSD, we have some amazing instrumentalities, public schools, or charter schools, that don't receive vouchers. They're funded by the taxpayers, and they are they have both a charter board and the school board, so they have accountability. And I think that's the big problem with vouchers, is the lack of accountability with the schools.
Okay, thank you very much. And Mr. Wade?
As we all know, federal bills come and go, and before they come to fruition and they're finally passed, there's going to be a lot of tweaking done. I agree, there should not be just a blank check given to the state. Our public school systems are the integral part of what we are nowadays throughout the United States. The KUSD public school system is first class. Vouchers, I guess I'm not sure on them yet, exactly where I would stand on them. Private voucher schools have no controls. They have no controls, yet they do get funding. Now, KUSD charter schools that are under our umbrella, they are governed by the KUSD, and therefore the tax dollars, and we can help, we set curriculum. But the private voucher schools, although there are many, many, many good ones, I'm sure, they do not have the same standards that public school systems have. And that's unfortunate, because you're not comparing apples to apples, it's apples and oranges. They don't have the same rule book that we do. But all in all, I think it's a matter of what's in the final bill and what we're going to have to live with, and we'll have to adjust to it at that time.
Okay, thank you. And last for this question is Mr. Jacobs.
So I'm going to start off with an issue with voucher programs that no one's really touched on yet, and that's the fact that there are numerous cases that we've seen across the country of voucher programs essentially being vehicles for taxpayer or embezzlement of tax dollars. You'll have schools that open up, they take your tax dollars, and then 6 months into operation in the school year, they close down, they leave town, and suddenly you have a bunch of students who no longer have a school to go to. That's disastrous. I think on a local level, we need to do whatever we can to fight against the federal government trying to force us to adopt voucher programs. If we want to adopt voucher programs in KUSD, that should be by our own agency, not the federal government coming down from on high and telling us what to do. It seems ironic to me, both on a state and a federal level, this party that keeps talking about local control, keeps putting asterisks on the money that they give us. They say, you know, they always say, well, we need to get the federal government or the state government out of local control of schools or local control of other aspects of local government. Yet, when state or federal funding comes down, it always comes with some kind of caveat, something that they want us to put it towards or that we need to put it towards. This is even happening with the incoming increase in state funding. We don't have control necessarily about what we can put that funding towards. The governor gets to dictate that, or the budget gets to dictate that. So it's a really big issue, and we also haven't really addressed, if this bill goes through as it is right now, taking these funds for vouchers out of Title I, that's going to put a lot of our schools at a serious disadvantage, because that funding is absolutely necessary in order to try and help these students that need that money the most.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm just here to reintroduce. My name is Karen Sconzert. I'm your Education Matters host for this Kenosha Unified School District Candidate Forum. We are here with KUSD School Board candidates Zach Jacobs, Gary Kunick, Mary Motter, and Dan Wade. This is the third question I'm asking today, and this time Mrs. Motter will go first. My question is, how do you use data to make informed decisions for the good of the educational community and all students? Mrs. Motter.
Well, as a teacher, I always used data to develop our individual education programs for the students. Currently in the schools, data is used as part of the MAP testing, the measure for academic progress where the students are tested and it's on a computer and you get the information right away. And there's a breakdown, really nice breakdown, of where the skill deficits exist. Now, I'm not exactly sure as far as at the school board level. I know that TARIC gives the school board members a lot of different data and a lot of different reading. And one of the things I think is very, very important for a school board member to do is to go over this data, do the research, get the background information so that they can make meaningful decisions. I don't think that the information should be done at the last minute. With a background in education, I'm pretty much used to researching problems and using data to inform my decisions.
Okay. And the next is Mr. Wade.
You know, that's a very interesting question. Data in and of itself, you have to determine, first of all, how the data was received. What were the questions asked to, you know, accumulate the data? Once you have it, then it's up to you as an individual or a company or a corporation to apply that data to your business plan, or in this case, your education plan. Personally, I like to have a lot of data and do a little comparison myself on a personal level. Now, on a board level, the data we get will generally come from Tarek Hamden, who is our financial officer. And he usually gives us a couple variations on the data. You know, one bit of data may come from one place and another bit of data from another place. So then it is basically up to us to determine, all right, what are we going to use? And how is this going to benefit the district? You have to have data to make an informed decision. You have to have. Otherwise, it's on a personal agenda item, and that's not what we're all about. It's how the data is accumulated and assimilated in your own mind and then distributed.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Jacobs?
So, being a student of chemistry, there's a lot of emphasis on the scientific method and the use of an experimental process to analyze data and resolve a problem. We talked a lot about now so far about national standardized testing like MAPS and data related to funding through TARIC. I would say beyond that, you know, you need a bit more of a local sampling as well. And what I mean by that is something based on local standards. What's the high benchmark of academic performance in our district? We should establish some sort of probably electronic standardized test to try and metric how students in our own district are doing compared to each other, not compared to the nation at large. And the main thing about this is bringing a scientific mind to this data. You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about we want common sense on the board, but a lot of times common sense isn't informed by information. Common sense is informed by a gut decision and a gut feeling. And a lot of times you need to really do some in-depth thought on the information presented to you and make a well-thought-out, analyzed decision on what to do with that data.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Kunick.
I'm going to disagree with Mr. Jacobs, because when I say that we've brought calm and common sense to the school board, what that means is we've made calm, rational decisions. And by common sense, we've looked at the data and what makes sense and what makes the best sense for our community overall. We say quite often data drives decisions in the Kenosha Unified School District, and that is what I'm talking about common sense. Frankly, we've seen in the past where former board members and other people, previous boards, they ruled on knee-jerk emotions, and that led to the chaos. We cannot allow that to happen. The data is important. As Mr. Wade said, you have to look where that data came from. You know, if it's a survey, how accurate is it? How widespread was it? When we're looking at graduation data, if there's a dip somewhere, what can we do? You know, is there something that we didn't do or we did do that we could do better? We also can't be afraid to bring in experts. That's why I've been a proponent of us reaching out and talking to Denise Fields, who really does a lot of great work with, she calls it her crisis in Black education, and she's been a middle school teacher and principal in Milwaukee Public Schools. She's seen the private school side, the charter side, and she's really good at collecting that data and helping others interpret that data, but more importantly, bringing people together. So you bring all these people into a room, and by the time she's done talking, she's able to pinpoint what everybody can do to contribute to that. It all pulls into play. It's the data. It's the people. It's the people working together to want to do what is best for the district with that data they are given. No personal agendas, no emotional things, just what is best for students, teachers, and taxpayers.
Okay, thank you all very much. Then the fourth question I have, we'll start with Mr. Wade this time, is what are the best ways for the school board to support the efforts of classroom teachers?
Well, we have to be their eyes and their ears. We have to, obviously pay is one of them too. I will start off with pay because we have to compensate our staff, all staff, not just teachers, but all staff, appropriately. There's been some talk in the past about what's a living wage? Well, a living wage is depending on what your lifestyle is. But I think if we offer the teachers, in this particular case, you know, specifically the teachers, the tools to do the job, whether that be, professional development, verbal support, moral support, getting more people involved. In other words, like the parents, businesses, helping the teachers make their job a little bit easier, yet providing the students with the best education possible. You talk to teachers, you listen. Oftentimes listening, whether it be to a teacher or anybody on any particular matter, is the best way to help. Sometimes they just need a sounding board, but they also need the support. Not only support of the board, support of all staff. We are a team. The KUSD is a team, and we have to operate like a team. There are no individuals in it. They're all part of a team.
Okay, thank you. And now Mr. Jacobs.
Yeah. Sorry. Real quick, I just wanted to bounce back to a previous statement. Common sense taught us that using leeches could cure the cold. It's important to keep an analytical mind. Common sense is the knee-jerk reaction. It's based on, if you're going off of common sense, why elect one person over another if it's common? But this specific issue, I would say that the best ways to assist our educators in the classroom is to give them adequate prep time so they can make sure that their courses and their classes have everything squared away and lined up. A lot of times, I remember in high school, a lot of my teachers were very rushed, and they didn't quite have enough time, and I've heard now it's even less sometimes for preparation before classes. We need to make sure that our compensation is adequate and competitive with other districts, or else we will, again, start losing teachers and not attract as many of the excellent teachers we currently have. We also need to have proper channels for concerns from our educators to administration. If I understand things correctly, our current policy is a sort of an open door policy, which can be quite harmful because it doesn't have a proper channel for those concerns to go from the educator up through administration. And finally, I'd say that we currently have integrated classrooms in many cases with special education students and our regular students, and that's excellent. It's good that we're bringing our special education students into the main classroom and give them the opportunities that they deserve. But in order to do that properly, we need more education assistance that can help with these special education students, and we need to ensure these education assistants are being compensated adequately because what they do is a difficult and very important job. So.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Kunick?
Thanks. We follow the law, and we stop the fighting. I think when teachers and parents in the district saw all the fighting and chaos 3 years ago, and frankly, board members acting very childish, they didn't have a lot of confidence in the board. So that's the first thing you have to do, and that's what we've done. I think we have a proven track record of that. We have to listen. We have to collaborate. We know that our teachers are on the front lines. Obviously, as others have said, we have to honor our teachers, whether it's with pay and benefits, and we try to do that. And it's one thing to say it. It's one thing to do it in deeds and actions. For instance, when we were talking about stipends earlier in the year, there was one board member who wanted to delay it. It wouldn't have been paid out until May or June. It took four motions that I put out there to ensure the teachers would, and other employees, full-time employees, would get that stipend before Christmas. I think that meant something to them. I think when our ESPs came forward and they said they didn't want their insurance increased, you know, and we didn't increase the insurance, and I'm against increasing their insurance right now. That shows them that we are committed to them. You know, I've been in these schools and classrooms as well. I give a lot of distracted driving presentations, and so I think it's important just to see, you know, what these teachers are doing on a day-to-day basis. And as Dan has said, as Mary said, listen to them. Listen to what they have to say. It's teachers have probably said we shouldn't put leeches on people to bleed them, so thanks, Zach, for that one. But, you know, that's the important thing, and I think we are doing that. I think we are showing support for the teachers in the classroom, and we're not afraid to listen to them. I've often told teachers, hey, come out and email me, talk to me. I don't mind. I don't mind when people come to the podium with different ideas.
Okay. Thank you. And Mrs. Motter.
Some of the things, I just want to go back to the question on data, and I do believe that data is extremely important. We do have to consider the source. It should be data-driven, but student-centered. So there does have to be some emotion involved. There does have to be some looking at the data and what it's in regards to. As far as support for teachers, I'll give the board the win on the keeping the insurance for the ESPs lower, because that was fair. Not so sure about the stipend, because with a percentage stipend, what happened was the teachers, well, the administrators at the top of the pay scale, such as Dr. Sue herself, received something like $6,000, and the educational assistant in the classroom received something like $50 after taxes. And as one ESP pointed out to me, they would have gladly waited until May or June for a larger check, and they did not feel supported by that money. I think it's important we look at all of our educators, including the educational assistants, who do not receive a living wage. They make between $15,000 and $18,000 for full-time work, and they work very, very hard. Another thing for teachers is, like Zach pointed out, is time, prep time. Prep time has been eroded. And looking at a study that was done in 2016, a KUSD survey, 65% of the teachers said they did not receive enough prep time. Now, just recently, the Kenosha Education Association did a survey, and they did it by having teachers poll their individual, their peers. So they found that 78% did not feel that they had enough time to adequately prepare meaningful lessons. And I think that needs to change.
Okay, thank you all. Well, we are nearing the end, believe it or not. So it is time for all of us to do our final statement. So once again, this is Karen Sconzert. I'm your host for Education Matters. This is the Kenosha Unified School District Candidate Forum for School Board. So the four candidates that are here with us today are Zach Jacobs, Gary Kunick, Mary Motter, and Dan Wade. And so we will go in that order. If you can each take about a minute to make a final statement, a final pitch to the voters as to why they should select you to be their representative on the school board. And we'll start with Mr. Jacobs.
So it's one thing to be philosophically committed to something, and it's another to be tangibly committed to something. You know, to say you're going to do something and then to take the action to actually get it done. You know, our salary schedule has been frozen for 4 years, and that's going to severely hurt our district and our educators. I would say one of the biggest things I can say about myself is that I'm not quick to action, but I will take action. It's good to have calm on the board, and it's good that everybody's getting along, but you need to make sure that that doesn't lead to stagnation, and that doesn't lead to the board being a rubber stamp board for the administration. You need to ensure that the board, as elected officials, are representatives of the will and the concerns of the community, the educators, the parents. And if elected, I will absolutely serve as that representative for your concerns and make sure that that gets to the district's administration.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jacobs. Now it's time for Mr. Kunick's final statement.
Zach is right. It's one thing to be philosophical and another to do it, and that's exactly what we've proven time and again with our actions, and that's why graduation rates are up 90% 2 years in a row. That's why we've seen an increase in African-American graduation rates, but we need to continue to work on it. That's why our taxes are in check. That is why, you know, we are trying to work with our teachers. I think Mary was incorrect. I think the survey, and I'll double check it, says 65% said prep time was important. I don't believe they said they weren't getting it. I am aware of the 78%. But you know, we're working with that. The reason why we did the percentage stipend was because our mid-level and higher teachers were leaving or threatening to leave because of the salary, and we wanted to give them a little bit more money. It's all about listening. It's all about collaborating. It's all about doing the right thing consistently, and we have done that for 3 years, and that's why I hope people will vote Gary J. Kunick for school board.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kunick. And the next final statement comes from Mrs. Motter.
As far as the graduation rates, we're currently seeing 75% graduation rate for African Americans and 85% for Hispanic students, and I believe that really needs to change. I believe we need to think outside the box, as Dan pointed out, and I believe that I have the background and the knowledge in education that can help us think outside the box. My budget priorities are what is going to lead to the best education for our students. And I believe that we need to involve the teachers in decision making. We need to have teacher leaders. And I believe that when we involve the teachers and we start listening to all of our employees, we're going to get a better result. We need to make use of our resources, such as mentoring and involving the colleges.
All right. Thank you very much, Mrs. Motter. And last but not least, our final statement from Mr. Wade.
The role of the board is one of governance, not administrative. All too often, the board will lose focus, transgress to the administrative side, which creates the impression of micromanagement. We, the board, must remain focused on the big picture. That is providing the best education to all of our students still fulfilling the duties as stewards of the taxpayer dollar. I'd like to believe that I have played a role in achieving those goals over the last 3 years. However, the work is never done. I'd like to be part of that ongoing process. As such, I'd be honored to receive your support and vote on April 4th. If, however, you feel I have not done my job over the last 3 years, then it is your obligation to the district and the students to select one of the other three candidates. This is too important a position to elect someone just because he or she is a nice person. Bottom line, our people are the future of our country. They deserve nothing less than the best we can offer. Above all, vote April 4th.
Well, thank you all very much. Once again, this is WGTD Education Matters, and this has been the Kenosha Unified School District Candidate Forum for School Board. The four candidates that you just heard from are Zach Jacobs, Gary Kunick, Mary Braun Motter, and Dan Wade. And if you would like to carry on a conversation about this, there will be a post on the WGTD Education Matters Facebook page later. This will also be available on our archive if you want to listen to the candidates' responses after the program has aired. Thank you all very much for participating. It was nice to meet you all, and good luck on April 4th.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support comes from Celebrate Jazz at Fusion in Kenosha, featuring the smooth jazz stylings of the Cal Bergendahl Project on April 8th at 8 p.m. Tickets are $8. For more information, visit KenoshaFusion.com or CalBergendahlProject.com.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, attend a pet licensing amnesty event at Racine City Hall on April 2nd from noon to 2 p.m. Proper documentation, vaccine certificates, and payment must accompany each application. Visit cityofracine.org.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.